back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. New government analysis confirms to us what we already knew, that the impacts of climate change in America falls disproportionately on African Americans and Hispanic communities. Titled Climate Change and Social Vulnerability in the United States, there's a focus on six impact areas. And the report came out just the beginning of September, just days after Hurricane Ida. And here we are with another massive storm pounding Texas. It's coming, these storms are becoming worse and worse. And who do they impact? Well, they impact on the shoulders of the socially vulnerable communities, including race and ethnic minorities, those low-income people, those who lack high school diplomas, and those age 65 years and older. So what do we need to know about this report, and how can we adapt our attitudes and our action plan for climate change? You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can also tweet at us at TPRSource, email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined by Robert Bullard, PhD, Distinguished Professor of Urban Planning and Environmental Policy, founder of the Bullard Center for Environmental and Climate Justice at Texas Southern University, a member of the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council. And Dr. Bullard, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Daryl Fears, environmental justice reporter for The Washington Post. Daryl Fears, it's great to have you today.
Thanks for having me, David.
So, Professor Bullard, if you could tell us more about this report, what were your big takeaways?
Well, you know, there's been lots of reports, and they all build on each other. And what this recent report really reaffirms the fact that communities of color and poor people and other vulnerable populations bear the brunt of the negative impact of climate change. And it also basically pulls out those vulnerabilities in specific categories. And no matter how you cut it, clearly, and when it comes to African Americans, for example, on all six categories, you see the worst disproportionate negative impacts falling there. And there's a history of why this is occurring. And this study is an important study, but it doesn't tell us anything that we didn't already know, that America is segregated, and so is pollution, and so are the negative disproportionate impact of climate change.
Daryl Fears at the Washington Post. There's been an observation that areas that had been redlined, which was a discriminatory practice that prohibited the loaning of mortgages and insurance and student loans and business loans to areas based on the racial composition of these neighborhoods, those redlined areas are some of the areas that are dealing with the worst effects of climate change. So what does that tell us?
That tells us that these areas were created by planners and zoners and government. And not only were these areas placed in vulnerable places, but they were then zoned for some of the worst pollution that you can imagine, pollutions that other areas did not want. And so in addition to being vulnerable to climate change and extreme weather, they're vulnerable to bad air quality. And when those two things mixed, it's particularly bad for these people, as we saw in Houston with the hurricane that hit there. In addition to flooding homes, it released toxins by the numerous facilities that exist there. And so this tells us that redlining tells us that these situations were created. This is not happenstance. People live in areas that they were designed to live in, and they were designed to live there in the worst type of situations in the country.
Robert Bullard, the report tells us that it's not just, you know, these people are going to be inconvenienced because their houses flood and they have to deal with other impacts of climate change. It is a lethal situation for these people, that their lives will be more miserable and they will not have a long lifespan because of these outcomes. That needs to be, I think, highlighted.
Well, you know, when I listen to the question and I read the report, you know, I documented this pattern 42 years ago in Houston in 1978 and 79. And this is Houston, the city that doesn't have zoning. So it meant that there were individuals that were deciding as to where things should go and where things should not go. And if you map vulnerability, and you can map in terms of economics, poor housing, a lack of green space, green canopy, lack of access to nature, looking at lack of access to health care, look at how the streets are configured and how which communities have flood mitigation and flood protection, and which communities are much more resilient in terms of hardened infrastructure. Now, this is not accidental, and the way you get that, those disparities, spatial and racial disparities, is planning, finance, and policy. And when you get that triangle coming together, you end up with elevated health disparities, asthma, respiratory illnesses, diabetes, cardiovascular, et cetera, and now COVID. And you can map the spatial location of people, overlay race and class, and then follow the money as to where money goes for infrastructure improvements, and then you can overlay the health outcomes and the disparity. We have great technology and great tools to do that now. So the problem is not that we don't have enough data, facts, and documentation. The problem is we don't have enough political will to spend to eradicate these disparities, and because of the fact that these disparities fall heavily disproportionately on people of color, then there seem to be this idea that these communities and these people, these populations, are expendable. It's just that simple.
Robert Bullard, you're in Houston right now. Flooding in the streets, neighborhoods flooded. It's just another situation. And people, are you in the dark right now? I understand you're having power outages.
I'm not in the dark because it's daylight, but I was in the dark 3:30 a.m. The power went off. You know, Nicholas came through here roaring through with wind and rain and water. And the idea, this is the second time that I have lost power because of a storm this year. First it was Winter Storm Uri, and now it's Nicholas. You know, I can fare much better than most who are in communities like in 3rd Ward, 5th Ward, Sunnyside, Cashmere Garden, neighborhoods in Houston that have names that are known, that are racially identifiable. Those areas were hit hardest with Harvey. They are the neighborhoods that were hit hard with Uri, and those will be the same neighborhoods that will get hit hardest with Nicholas. It's very predictable. And so the idea of let's harden our infrastructure in terms of buildings, but we also need to harden our social infrastructure, our human social network, so that we can become much more resilient and bounce back. So put money into schools and parks and green space and other kinds of things that somehow get left out when we talk about financing.
Terrell Fears, environmental justice reporter for The Washington Post. The Biden administration has added this environmental justice component to the EPA. Robert Bullard is a part of that. What are your expectations? What's that going to do?
I think that that's still being worked out. And I think that it is very slow moving. It's not extremely extraordinary transparent. We're still waiting to hear on a regular basis how this is working in the Biden administration. Are they living up to the promises of putting environmental justice offices in every department? And, you know, how will that work? How will they work? What will they do? And so we haven't seen that yet. Of course, this is fledgling. And so you don't want to hold the administration to something that has never been, that's really never been done. And to Dr. Bullard's point, I mean, he began pointing out these things 40 years ago. And the study that we're talking about today is the first of its kind. And it's just the government's acknowledgement that what people were, have been saying for 40 years is true. And so this is a very slow moving effort. I think the Biden administration still has a lot to prove beyond very positive work rhetoric for environmental justice advocates. He's done some good things. He's put some people who've been involved in environmental justice issues forever. I mean, I just wrote a story about the origins of the movement, and most of those people are on these panels. But I haven't seen, other than a lot of language and a lot of talk, I haven't seen a lot of effective policy coming from the Biden administration just yet. There have been some things, but there hasn't been a lot. But again, it's only been, what are we in, September? 9 months.
Right. But we do have this infrastructure package. It's supposed to be working its way through Congress. We're seeing it being held up, particularly over some of its green energy initiatives and efforts as well to deal with environmental justice. I wonder what that tells us. So we'll come back. We'll talk about that more. Also about urban heat islands, extreme heat, the impact of people. That's something that we can talk about here in San Antonio with great authority. If you've got a question or a comment about environmental justice and climate change, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about climate change and vulnerable communities, a poor population, communities of color. They get it the worst. I mean, we always say this, the poor pay more, and that means it's true as well for the impact of climate change. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So Robert Bullard, so we've got this $3 trillion deal that they're trying to work through in Congress, and they're trying to get Senator Manchin to come along on this, and he's dragging his feet, and he's saying, I don't know about it. And we're seeing that he's got a lot of connections with the oil and big oil industry, and they're not crazy about all these green energy stuff in this infrastructure package. And it makes me wonder about the future of our democracy and how climate change could be another stressor for our democracy from two ways. One of them is a lot of the people who are now attacking our institutions seem to be well-funded by people who don't like addressing climate change. And then finally, when we're dealing with the real impacts of climate change, mass migration, mass flooding, and other horrible effects, it's really hard for a society to maintain a democracy under those conditions. Do you see an overlap between how well-functioning our society will be in the future if we don't get climate change dealt with now?
Well, let me just give you my take. When we talk about climate change, we have to move beyond just talking about parts per million in greenhouse gases. Climate change, as we talk about the climate crisis, we're talking about a crisis in terms of environmental, economic, housing, energy, transportation, food and water security. We're talking about health. And we're talking about environmental justice. So, and all of that is embedded in a political system that right now we're fighting the same forces that are trying to deny public policy and transformative change to address and arrest this climate crisis. The same forces are trying to dismantle our democratic foundation in our country, voting. And so when we talk about moving to address climate change, we have to, those same groups and organizations that will fight just as hard to deal with the climate crisis also have to fight just as hard to preserve the right to vote, and particularly in those states that have a history of denying people of color access to the vote. I mean, Texas is a good example. The same forces are there. And that's why we have to not just, you know, go into the corner and just think that we're only dealing with climate. We're also dealing with voter suppression. We're dealing with not wanting to support safety net programs that we know make us much more healthier and a much stronger society when it comes to national security. That's how we have to attack the problem. And those folks who are taking lots of money from the oil and gas company, including senators, we have to basically fight that battle and see it as one of the same. It's not a separate battle. It's not a separate struggle. It's the one and the same.
And Darrow Fears, environmental justice reporter to Washington Post, are you able to tell that story?
I'm sorry, tell what story?
The story of the overlap between the stressors in our democracy and the inability to us to address the issues of climate change, how it's impacting poor people, and it seems to be all interwoven.
It is. It's a political story, and I think it's a political story that we well know. I think that that story is being told every day. You know, you don't need an environmental reporter to sort of tease out what that is. I wrote a story just recently about the $1 trillion infrastructure plan that was targeted to help African American communities that were divided by freeways in this country. And this is just an example of how these forces that Dr. Bullitt talked about just now work. There was $20 billion set aside to reconnect communities that had been divided by freeways. And in the Senate negotiation sessions, that was whittled down to $1 billion, which will do nothing. So you can tell these stories. They're out there. We have been telling these stories. We are able to tell these stories. I just hope that people are paying attention.
In this APA report, there are six areas that they see as impact areas analyzed by the EPA vulnerability report: air quality and health, extreme temperature and health, extreme temperature and labor. Texas leads the number of people who die on the job from extreme heat, coastal conditions and traffic, coastal flooding and property, and inland flooding and property. So these are things that you're living with right now, Robert Bullard. It's all happening all around you in Houston.
Yes. I mean, it's not like theory. This is real. And if you look at, you know, if you just step back and look at the EPA report and then look at the 2021 GPA report from the American Society of Civil Engineers, America was given a C-minus grade. But if you look at those grades that got D-minuses, you're talking about public parks, you're talking about roads, you're talking about schools, you're talking about stormwater, transit, wastewater, levees, you're talking about hazardous waste. If you map those worst infrastructure, it will map closely with the most vulnerable communities when it comes to climate change, the most vulnerable communities when it comes to issues around environmental protection, when it comes to pollution, and when it comes to health, environmental health disparities. This is not rocket science, people. This is more political science that's driving this train, and it's driving up the health disparities and the economic disparities. We know who work outside. We know who have those jobs where you can't telework. You have to work outside. We know when it gets too hot to work outside what that will be. It will be more than just the economic disruption. We're talking about elevated health disparities. We're talking about individuals losing their livelihood, but also losing their economic power to provide for their families, and heat strokes, et cetera. That's the kind of connectivity and intersectionality and trying to make sure that people understand when we talk about climate, we're talking about economics, we're talking about health, we're talking about transportation. You know, I wrote a book called Highway Robbery, Transportation Racism. I wrote that book in 2004. What's happening, what Darrow wrote about this month in terms of highways crisscrossing, cutting through black communities in South Carolina, they were trying to do the same thing here in Houston with the expansion of I-45, in Mobile, Alabama, in Africatown. These stories, these fad stories, keep reproducing themselves, and what we say is time for it to stop.
Urban heat islands in a city. the temperature can vary as much as 10 degrees from one location to another because of the lack of trees, leafy green spaces, water features, and that typically, again, in those areas that had been redlined. And Robert Bullard, those people, we have people, low-income people, communities of color living in areas where the weatherman tells you on TV it's 95, but at those locations it's 103. And that takes an impact on their lives.
And we know that. I mean, it's 103, and there's no grocery stores, poor transit. There's, you can't, no access to a hospital. This is planned or lack of planning. And you know, there's a study that said that 74% of people of color live in nature-deprived neighborhoods. Nature-deprived means no green space, no green canopy. And we're compared with 23% of whites. What you're talking about is basically outdoor apartheid. You're talking about a physical space that have been that somehow denuded of those things that make us healthy. And we know how nature has this nurturing impact on the brain and on children. I mean, you're in nature and you feel good. You want to walk and you want to talk and you want to, I mean, it calms you down. And if you don't have that, you have other problems that in terms of our society. Now, we know that. So it's not having the facts. It's whether or not, what are we going to do about it?
Right. So what do you do about it? Daryl Fears, you're a reporter for The Washington Post. You take a national view. But is this a national problem, or could communities come together and tell their city council the next time there's a bond election that we want money here?
You know, I'm not sure. It certainly is a national problem. One of the things that the EPA pointed out in its report that we're talking about, of course, is that Latino or Latinx communities are certainly more vulnerable to heat stress. In fact, the Oregon Occupational Safety Panel reported just recently that a worker outdoors died from heat stress. And so Latinos were more likely than any other group to die from that. And that's something that that community can focus on. With Native Americans, flooding is the biggest problem. And so that's something that that group can focus on. I think that these groups have tried to come together as one in the past, way back in 1990, and they tried again in 2000. It hasn't happened again because there is some, and Dr. Bullard can certainly speak to this, there was some dissension within the groups, but it just seems that it would take a concerted effort, a strategy on the part of activists and on the part of governments. And frankly, it shouldn't take these people to do this. This is something that local and national leaders should be focused on and something that should get done. This is not, once again, a new problem. This is something that we've been addressing for some time. And as I write about these issues, you know, I learned that they were glaring and that they were out there and politicians know about them.
Daryl Fears, he's an environmental justice reporter for the Washington Post. Robert Bullard, he is a PhD professor of urban planning, environmental policy, founder of the Bullard Center for Environmental and Climate Justice at Texas Southern University, a member of the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council. It was an honor to talk to you, sir. And Daryl Fears, it was great talking to you, too. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaowen Chen. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.